Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. I've had several guests on who have had an issue in life, and it became their mission, their raison d'etre, to help others through the same predicament. Today's guest is one of those people. But Amita didn't just go out and learn more, get a coaching certificate, and put out her shingle. She traveled to different countries, comparing different cultures and speaking with professionals in each of those countries and cultures. She brought many of those professionals on as advisors, ensuring a list of topics and modalities for her clients, as well as becoming truly culturally sensitive. The good news for us is that Amita addresses menopause, as well as peri and postmenopause. What might not be pertinent for us most assuredly is pertinent for our daughters. Listen now. We are all boomer women, so we've been through the mill with perimenopause, menopause, employers not getting it, probably not caring, actually probably not even wanting to voice the words. We're good for the job, we're good for birthing the next generation of employees, although that can be considered an inconvenience too. Just don't talk about hormones and periods and menopause. Very slowly but surely, that is changing in some arenas. Changing because of people like my guest today. Amita is younger than us, but has been through the same ringer washer. But Amita got proactive and has developed holistic wellness programs for taboo topics such as sexual health, menopause, stress, anxiety, amongst other issues that women go through. Some of this will apply to you, dear listener. All of it will apply to your daughters. Amita Sharma, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I absolutely love your podcast, the way you bring out the real feelings and the real topics out in the open. So I'm very thankful.
Well, and you're welcome to go anywhere we go today. That's great. No holds barred. Amita, start at the beginning. Our audience is going to nod along as you speak. You struggled with perimenopause in a corporate mm-hmm. setting. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are millions of women who are still struggling. And with me, working in the very high-tech, high-paced, super-paced, actually, environment, and I started experiencing the strange symptoms. And the thing is, I absolutely had no clue of the word called perimenopause. And I have talked to 4,000 women around the world, and they echo the same feeling. They said, oh, holy shit, is it going to be, excuse my language here, what do you mean there's a perimenopause and I'm having strange things? And that's what started happening to me, sweating and, I couldn't sleep at night, and in the morning I'm groggy and my brain can't function properly. Now it impacts my work and I'm like, oh my God. And I had no clue that perimenopause can last women 4 to 10 years before they hit the final switch off button, menopause. Yeah. I'm telling you, it's like, oh my, so what do you do? For so many years that you are at the peak of your career in 40s, typically perimenopause starts when you're 40 or something, and then you're at the peak of your career, you don't want to retire, you don't want to quit, but you have to deal with this demon that's just going to stay with you. So that's sort of like in a very high nutshell was my story, and I had no clue that this demon is going to stay with me.
Well, it's interesting too, because as the next generation above you, it's like mm-hmm. part of that is on us. You know, mm-hmm. like we talked to you about the facts of life and all this sort of stuff. And I have two daughters in their late 30s, and mm-hmm. I've interviewed a few women now on perimenopause and menopause and all that stuff. And I'm thinking mm-hmm. we have to go and have a real sit down talk, the three of us, so that this does not come as a surprise to them. You know, it's, I think once, I always said the statute of limitations on parenting runs out when the kids turn 18, but in this particular case, maybe it doesn't. And as you were talking about perimenopause and all these issues you were going through, that affects every part of your life. It not only affects your job, it affects your parenting, it affects your relationships, you know, mm-hmm. so majorly important that we bring this out into the open. Now, when did you decide to sort of take matters into your own hands and create NourishDoc?
So it wasn't immediate, to be honest with you. I was just so kind of bogged down by trying to take care of myself, all these strange, unpredictable. Okay, I want to use the word unpredictable. The thing that bothered me was this unpredictability of the symptoms that would just show up. Suddenly, you were in a meeting in a professional setting, or you are going outside and suddenly, you know, you are kind of dripping or you have all these things. And that is something that bothered me the most at that time, the unpredictability, the fact that I'm not prepared and I'm working in a company, in an organization or a tech where everything is so super planned, each and every little thing. And we release the features, you know, we do all these testing. And here I am personally, no testing, no, nothing. And I'm like a completely like in the Wild Wild West, right? So that was the biggest issue. So it took me years to really come to an understanding when I should really do the NourishDoc. So I started with a holistic lifestyle, embracing holistic lifestyle. I was not unhealthy, but I would indulge into processed foods and all these things. And slowly, I started taking matters into my hand, and by embracing holistic lifestyle, it started helping me. And then I realized, a few years back, I wanted to do something like a mega holistic lifestyle for everything. And that never works, right? You need to kind of narrow it down. And I wanted to do it on this menopause. And everybody told me, are you crazy? This is taboo. This is stigma. Nobody will buy it. Nobody will listen to you. I'm talking 5 years back. Every single person I talked to said, nobody's going to listen to you. You do not want to focus yourself on such a narrow thing. That to menopause. I'm like, that's exactly what I want to do. He said, no, you expand your thing. So slowly, when I started expanding and I'm talking to women, and most of the women I talked to, they said, oh my God, you hit a nerve. You hit a nerve on my emotions. Thank God somebody's talking about it. So a couple of years back, 2.5 years back, we decided, I said, okay, we're going to focus only on menopause. We're going to make this topic come out in the open, and we're going to give a solution by this holistic wellness. So that's kind of how this whole journey started. So it wasn't one day. It took some time of realization that the fact that this whole word menopause, perimenopause, is not only taboo, not well researched, right? And it has so many consequences it could have on a woman's health post-menopause. You know, I did enough research to understand that. And as a society, as a community, all of the world, we just are not bringing it up as a natural stage of a woman's life, rather than doing hush, 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 right?
Well, and I'm going to throw a question at you. The word patriarchy comes to mind because the medical system, like all of that, has been traditionally male run. Have you ever looked into those few societies that are matriarchal to find out if these taboos exist? I'd just be curious. I'm sort of out in left field there.
So I don't know anywhere in the world matriarchal societies exist, to be honest with you.
Well, I think a lot of our indigenous cultures, it's matriarchal.
Yeah, indigenous cultures, I looked at a lot of other societies, cultures. This is all cultural sensitive. So I looked at like societies in Sudan, for example, predominantly Muslim country, but there the age is actually much younger than in the United States. So that's not good. But just to give you an example, the average age of a woman reaching menopause is about 51, 52. That is perfectly fine. But in a country like Sudan, where predominantly Muslim women, it's 45, 46. Same thing I looked into India, and the same story, 46, 47. So these are now not matriarchal societies. They are subservient societies to women, and women are reaching menopause earlier than they should. That's what I looked at.
Okay.
Right? And even here in the United States, I looked at Latino communities and African-American communities. They also reach menopause 2 to 3 years earlier than they're supposed to. So,
okay, well, that's interesting because I'm just scrolling down my notes here because I wanted to ask you about culturally sensitive, and I was showing off my own ignorance. I just would always think that, you know, women are women. And I wasn't sure, wanted to ask you, do women from other cultures experience peri and menopause differently? Mm-hmm. And then the follow-up to that is the cultural reaction mm-hmm. to women's menopause mm-hmm. significantly different in other cultures?
Yeah, it is, right? So, like, different cultures have some cultures, like Japanese and all, you know, they think women have become wiser, you know, they regard them in high respect, things like that. But majority of the time, typically Muslim cultures or other cultures, they're thinking, well, it's sort of like end of fertility, right? I mean, that it is signifying end of fertility. So it's not... like, okay, it could be considered in not a negative connotation, but in the sense now that women cannot bear any kids.
So we've outlived our usefulness.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't want to use that word, but
right? It's a fact. Yeah.
It's a fact because some of these cultures, they are allowed multiple marriages and producing an offspring is very, very important. So there is that kind of a feeling, and not only the other people, I think women also feel like that, right? The end of fertility, maybe the end of youth, they might feel like that in some cultures, right? Oh my God, like especially when you're hitting earlier menopause, you know, you feel like your feminism might be going down, all these things, right? So I think it's the way we have been projecting. We have, like, to your point, you know, you said, moms have not, you know, like we haven't really talked about this topic properly the way we talked about puberty or other topics to our daughters or to our friends or anyone. And now that if you go back one generation, like my mom, you know, she never worked. So she didn't have these kind of issues, what we as a society now are facing as women, because we are working, we are more stressed out. We are financially independent, majority of us, especially in the United States, I'm talking now. And now the whole menopause experience is different than it used to be a few decades back.
Right.
Right?
And I'm going to go, I'm out in left field, I might as well stay there. Yeah. If in certain cultures menopause happens earlier, mm-hmm. I know in North American cultures, the States, Canada, we have our children often later now.
Yes.
So it's not unusual for women in their mid to late 30s starting families.
Mm-hmm.
What's the cultural difference there? Are populations going to be diminishing because that window of opportunity is shortening or is being shortened?
Yeah, so I'll tell you, the studies that I have done are in United States and UK and India, some of these places where I have gone a little bit deeper. But especially in other cultures, women are working now everywhere. Majority of them are working now. You know, when I look at a country like India, for example, you know, it's gone are the days when women are staying home and not doing anything. So, yes, my
generation. Hey, I'm going to call you on that one. Yeah. I've always given stay-at-home moms a lot of credit for the work they do.
Yeah, no. My generation stay-home moms, but when I look at the younger, like 30-something, they don't want to become a stay-home mom. That was the point I was trying to make. They don't want to have kids in their early 30s. I mean, that's the... And I'm not saying that's universal for all women, but these are metro, like big cities, right? Because things are changing. The cultures are changing. You cannot now say, okay, one culture here, one culture here. Women want to be independent financially, and they don't understand the topic that we are talking about, that the fertility window for them is going to become so narrow. And God forbid if they have this perimenopause starting in their mid-30s to late-30s, which is happening very, very common now in a lot of cultures, your fertility window is so low and the infertility rates are going higher. We know that, right? It's become a problem in a lot of cultures now, not only in the United States, but a lot of other countries as well.
And I think for women my age, you know, our daughters are sort of in that 40 age yeah. range, it becomes very important if they are working that they understand that this, you're going to be in the middle of that meeting. You're going to be doing a presentation. You're going to be under a deadline. And mm-hmm. when your body starts to go sideways, you know, whether it's mm-hmm. the sweats or the brain fog or whatever, mm-hmm. it's like, this is a reality. And maybe earlier in your 30s is the time to really look at the corporate culture of, you know, who your bosses are. Do they understand this is, you know, going to happen, that sort of thing. I have two daughters. One went straight back to work after her maternity leave. The mm-hmm. other chose to be a stay-at-home mom, and it's working. So it's really mm-hmm. interesting. Yeah, they're all over the map. So, yeah, that's
interesting. No, I think stay-at-home mom is important because to raise your kids for your own sanity as well, right? I mean, after birth of my kids, you know, I stayed home for a few years, couple of years, 2-3 years, because you are like so stressed out and you want to give you want to give yourself to your young babies, right? So I personally, if you ask me, my personal opinion, I am all for stay-at-home moms, but the society nowadays is so brutal that, you know, I'm just sharing what the society and the fact that the financial, you know, issues yeah. are so brutal nowadays that you almost need two incomes to do a good, I mean, unless, of course, the exceptions are there. But I'm just talking generally, right? Yeah.
And I think in North America, it's not unusual for one of those parents to have two jobs. You know, so they both have jobs, but one has yes. two jobs. You know, it's just, yes. yeah, it's getting ridiculous now. With
yes, it's getting very, very difficult to raise kids,
yeah.
To raise a family and also have a career at the same time. I mean, I know I've gone through that and I was a mess for so many years trying to balance, you know, your kids, little kids and picking them up and trying to meet those deadlines and all those things. I mean, and it's a hard one. Okay. It's not an easy one. It's yeah. I really feel for all the young moms over there, it is so difficult. You do not want to give up your career. You want to take care of your kids at home, and then you are caught in between, and you are scared if you take time off. But I was, and I said, if I take too much time off, I won't be able to go back.
Yeah, and I can remember 35 years ago, even just working part-time mm-hmm. and going to my female boss whose children were 10 years older than me, and I said, like, I live with guilt on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. I said, how did you do it? And she mm-hmm. said, oh, no, we all live with that guilt. You know, so I guess it's like we're not going to win no matter what we do. So if we can get the corporate culture mm-hmm. under control, then maybe.
it's a fact. You know, we all live with the guilt and we all try our best at that time because family is important to most, you know, all the moms who've given birth. Family is important. The kids are important. But you can't do the best job sometimes.
Well, and I do want to move on to a few other things, but I guess the last question to do with all this is just like, can we just recommend that those young women cut themselves some slack?
Yes.
You know, they're all doing such a really good job yes. and yes. nobody can do everything. So mm-hmm. it's, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah. Okay, you use the word holistic. You mentioned it earlier. What does holistic mean to you?
So holistic to me is a mind and body connection. It's not just a physical health of our body, right? Which we are in the Western world, you know, we get sick, we call a doc and we get a medication and physically, okay, we take care of our physical bodies. Holistic means your mind, how you think, your relationships, your emotions, your social fabric, your psychological, everything is connected. We always think of our bodies. I mean, we are trained to think of our bodies as a compartment, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Different compartments. And that's not what holistic means. So if you talk to like a naturopathic doctor, which I've spent a lot of time learning about this, and I could not understand sometimes, you know, the licensed acupuncturist or the Ayurveda doctors, I'll talk to them about something. And say, no, I take care of all. I take care of all the ailments. And a person could have, I said, how can you do that? We have a doctor for like, you know, different things. Yeah. And that's how it's supposed to be. How can one person know everything? So the understanding is your body works in unison. It doesn't work like, okay, your knee is going this way and that is going that way and, you know, your head is going this way. You need to fix, right, the root cause of it. And I'm not undermining the modern medicine. Of course, it's necessary, you know, the surgery and all that is necessary. But the fact is, the basics, the fundamentals of our body is all in unison. And that's what holistic is trying to do, that you fix your body, but you need to fix your mind too.
I guess the analogy that comes to mind as you explain all that is like building a house where you've got the general contractor who runs the show. That's the GP.
Yes.
But that general contractor has the plumbers and the electricians and the carpenters and the drywallers. And, you know, so and everything goes to the appropriate place for the specialty. And our GPs probably need to do a little bit more than that, because, as you say, they can't know everything, as well as know all the side effects of all the billions of drugs that are out there now. So,
Yes.
You talk about anti-aging, and I'm fine with aging, but mm-hmm. I want to do it in a healthy way, keeping strong, happy, creative, mm-hmm. all that stuff, as long mm-hmm. as I can. I want to go through some of the different areas of what you do, mm-hmm. but talk to us about the aging component and longevity.
Yeah, so when we talk about the anti-aging, we're not talking about getting fillers and Botox.
Thank you.
That's not what we are saying. We are saying living healthy, aging meaning aging gracefully, and longevity. You know, that's what we really mean. Maybe we should change the words a little bit. It should not come out as like we are suggesting Botox and stuff. That the idea is that the quality of life, the embracing lifestyle and dietary methods and some of the other holistic therapies, so that as you start aging, you're living your full life with physical, mental, and psychological, what I talked about earlier. And that's what the aging, anti-aging is really, that, you know, okay, when we say anti-aging, a lot of women come to us and they say, oh my God, I'm losing my hair. A side symptom of menopause, you know, because of the whatever hormones I put, or I'm having a pain in my joint, or I'm having issues with my, you know, whatever, also the bone health and stuff like that. So we are really coming in from that angle to prevent a chronic condition and live your life to the fullest as you age. And I can explain you what I mean by the chronic condition and all these things if you like me to.
Well, and I think even just the psychological of mm-hmm. just because I'm 70 doesn't mean I'm old. And yes. I was actually listening recently to somebody who was talking about longevity and the value of our elders and everything else. And he said something about his father turning 70. And he mm-hmm. said, oh my God, my dad doesn't look 70 at all. And I'm going like, your dad actually does look 70 because he's 70. And that's what 70-year-olds look like these days. You know, it was interesting, him supposedly being on the right path, but making a comment like that, which was really sort of ageist and stuff like that. I'm going to go through some of your different components. The next one was emotional wellness. So you mentioned stress, grieving, that sort of thing. Can you go there for a few minutes?
Yeah, so emotional wellness, it's important for women to understand that they might go through emotional roller coaster when they're going through this stage of their life. And I'm talking starting in menopause. Post-menopause, I think still it gets stable, you know, after the periods stop. And so it's important for them to understand that they're going through all these mood swings, right? And it's and they need to, if they need to take care of themselves, they need to learn all the tactics, all the tools to take care of these emotional roller coaster that's happening due to the hormonal fluctuations that happen, which can be completely beyond your control. So that's what we, and also at the time afterwards, is that as women get reaching the menopause, the kids typically leave the homes. So the emptiness is another one that happens to a lot of women, and then again they can go through these, you know, being empty nest and losing the purpose of life, and the kids are no more, especially stay-home moms. I've seen a few of my friends, you know, now they can't go back to work because the careers they left a long time back. So there could be at that time also a moment of emotional instability for lack of purpose. So there could be different moments, right, that women are going through emotional roller coaster. The other thing is your relationship sometimes with the partner changes for women, because sometimes the sexual health interest goes down in quite a few of the women. So loss of libido is considered one of the symptoms as well. And that also can impact your emotional wellness. So there could be so many reasons. I'm just citing some of the common reasons that happen to women. And the idea we're bringing all this out is because they need to talk it openly, whatever is happening, whatever is causing that anguish, right, in their mind. They cannot hold it, thinking that, oh my God, what am I going to do, right? So you need to bring it out. So I wanted to bring this emotional wellness, very, very important for women to understand that they need to feel good, not only in their physical bodies, but mental, emotions, the relationships as well. And it is important for their overall health.
Well, and as you were explaining that, I was thinking about the word grieving, where so often we think of, you know, their husband died, so they're grieving, yes, that what sort of thing. But so many parts of that with menopause,
yes,
and what you've just explained, you know, the children no longer need you. So you've lost that primary role as a mother. You know, you've lost your ability to bring children into the world. Oh, I love your mug. Is that Tigger on your mug?
I know.
That's great. I love it.
It's when my kids gave me a present when they were little. I still have it.
And it's the biggest coffee mug in town. That's great. Or tea mug. But anyways, just that whole grieving process of,
yes,
there's so many pieces to there. Mm-hmm. Now, you went with sexual health. Let's go there next. Because, you know, like any of us that have gone through it know that there's just so many changes, and, you know, whether it's vaginal dryness or lack of libido, whatever. Can you go there?
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, you know, these hormone fluctuations are going to impact your entire body, right? You don't know where it's going to get impacted. That's the problem, the unpredictability I talked about. So sexual health could be, at least the data talks about one third of the women are going to have issues with the loss of libido, vaginal dryness, you know, the vaginal lining gets thin. So sometimes there could be pain in sexual intercourse, all these things, right? And then you lose interest and you don't want to have it. And sometimes, you know, believe it or not, 60% of the divorces that are happening in UK and US are during these years.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying sexual health is the only reason, but it piles up, right? So so all these things can happen, and it's normal. That's what I want to tell all your listeners, is there is nothing wrong if something like this happens. You just need to seek help, right? It's perfectly normal to have all these things. That's why we're talking openly. So you need to seek help, and there are different ways that can help you take care of the vaginal dryness, and, you know, some of the supplements, some of the herbs, some of the exercises. Even sometimes if someone needs an estrogen patch or HRT, it's perfectly okay. So these are the things in sexual health. The main thing is for women to come out and openly talk about the problems that they are, if they are having loss of libido, and if their partner and her, they are openly communicating the issues. That communication is very key in this.
Yeah, and I will add too that it's my understanding that it's at the same time of life that men start going through changes. And you said communication, so big on communication. I've had a couple of sex therapists on, and they all talk about the fact that you can redefine sex. It can become more about the intimacy. It doesn't have to be about erections and insertion and stuff like that. So once again, just getting your head around changes and coming up with ways. Now, whether you do that by yourself or with a therapist, of living with it or dealing with it or fixing it, whatever it can be done. But just looking at a bit more big picture idea.
Yes. Absolutely. This is a topic that needs to be discussed because it is part of our body, and we cannot say, okay, that part of the body is now not working and let me just ignore it, right? That's the point I'm trying to make. That is, it's like talk with your sexologist or sexual health expert or someone who can help you if you want to maintain the, you know, a good sexual health, whichever way. Like you said, doesn't have to be insertion. It could be something else. But stimulating that part of the body is important for your overall health as well.
Okay, we've got that out of that. No. Yeah, and it's
not that important.
It's just, I think out of all the things we're going to talk about today, sexual health is just as taboo. Like, you just don't talk about sex, oftentimes not even with your girlfriends.
And not even with your partner. It's more taboo than menopause. I mean, you combine 2-3 taboos, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. And then we'll throw in the taboo about talking about money in there too. And it's just like, oh, yikes. Okay. This next one I'm going to be real careful about asking about weight loss. Weight gain can go with the territory with some women. Mm-hmm. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, you know, I put on a lot of weight, I'll tell you that. And it was so hard to take it out because I was not eating it right. And that's what we women end up doing. Now, weight gain could be one of the, again, issues because of the hormone fluctuation, right? We talked about that. And what's happening sometimes is one hormone could be dominant than the other hormone, and then it starts accumulating in our midriff, typically here, the tummy that doesn't, belly, right? We call it meno belly, it doesn't go away, and then the weight starts putting on. So all I can say is you can lose weight in a healthy way, okay? I have managed to do that. And I am seriously, I used to have so many problems. I was so overweight, 180 pounds. Can you believe it? And I used to struggle with it. And I was never, had problems with the weight when I was much younger, like in my 20s. And suddenly this whole perimenopause, menopause started. I'm like going all over the map. So the trick is the weight loss is that you cannot start dieting like 1200 calories. You are not nourishing yourself. That's the problem. And I used to think, I need to stop eating completely and I will start losing weight, right? We women think like that. I don't know what's wrong with us. But that's wrong.
Yeah.
You need to nourish yourself properly with the right type of foods. And then, of course, the exercise comes in. Right. So if you start doing that regularly, like clockwork, as a daily routine, literally like a military clockwork, and that's what I started doing, you will start shedding off that excess weight that women end up, loading up.
Right. Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that whole activity, shall I say. Exercise has got such a bad rap. You know, people think they've got to, push weights and, run and stuff like that. But even like getting out for a daily walk that really sort of pushes the breath work. And of course, I'm going to throw my own plug in here, is there's so many boomer podcasts out there that they can start on Monday with ours, mine. But it's something to do. And then, learning more stuff or following interesting things on podcasts. But yeah, it's such a combination. When you maintain your muscle mass, then you're going to burn off more of those calories that you eat. And then also bone density, which is another big thing in aging. Like, it's just, as you started out saying, there's just so many facets that all fit together and you can't look at one without another.
Absolutely. And weight is like, just losing the weight just for the heck of the physical health and looking good is not good. Like, you need to make sure you're healthy, right? That's the point I want to make. It's so important for women to understand that if you're depriving yourself, later on as you age, some other complications can happen, which you don't know. So you really need to make sure you put your meals properly, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Do not skip the meals. It's so important. You are automatically doing intermittent fasting if you eat at 7 p.m. As an example, that's what I do. 7 p.m. I have my dinner. And then until the morning, I don't have it till 9 o'clock, the breakfast. You already have the built-in intermittent fasting for 14 hours. I haven't eaten anything. That's okay. And 10 hours, I'm eating proper. Proper breakfast with proper protein, proper carb and fat, and then lunch, and then dinner. Do not skip anything. If you do that, you will be fine.
Yeah, I'm all for that. And I guess, too, we need to talk about genetics, where some people are genetically lean. They will be lean all their lives, and then other people will not be. So, you can't look at your next door neighbor and go like, what am I doing wrong? It could well just be genetics. So, We've covered off several different topics here, and the word hormones kept on coming up. And I was going to ask, are they all hormone driven as we get older? And it sounds like the answer might be yes.
Yeah, because the hormones play such an important role in our bodies. And then when they are depleting, they're going down. So those are important, right, for taking care of so many functions in our body. So what, you know, our company, what we are trying to do is teach people to use the food as medicine, right? And use natural foods to supplement some of the hormones that are depleting. That's what we are trying to advocate. Not the fact that we're not against women taking HRT. You know, some women might need HRT, and because of the bone issues, because of so many other issues. So I think it's important to understand, start with the natural and the holistic first, and then if you need the hormones, to your point, you know, the extra boost, then of course you need to talk to a medical professional or someone, right, who can prescribe you the right dosage, because the dosage and the type of hormones and all those things becomes very, very complicated. It's not that easy. It's not one size fit all that, oh, I'm going to go pick up an estrogen patch and I'm going to put it out here and I'll be fine. The estrogen, you do not want to do all these kind of crazy things.
And from what I've learned from interviewing other people who do deal with hormone replacement is you've got to be careful of the quality of that stuff too, because there's so much, for lack of a better word, crap on the market that, you know, you could really be doing yourself a disservice.
Yes, yes. There are bioidentical hormones that typically from the research that I have done are considered better, but they're not regulated by FDA. I mean, this is so much nuances, so many complications, and bioidentical hormones are technically mimic the natural part of, you know, in their composition. So you absolutely need a very good expert who understands the different and who takes your testing, you know, your whatever testing they need to do, whether it's blood testing or a Dutch testing. A Dutch testing is typically for hormones or whatever they need to do, and then they, you know, the right dosage is given to you. So in this particular case, a good qualified expert becomes super critical.
I want to go back to the culturally sensitive for a moment, because you talked about doing studies in Sudan and India and the U.S., Britain maybe. If you took women from all those four countries, put them together in the U.S., for example, you were able to find women from each of those cultures in the U.S., would they still have those differences, or do things sort of balance out and become more equal if the total environment is similar?
I'll tell you what, I know enough Muslim groups in this country, right? Different groups, different ethnic groups, I should say that. You know, I am also part of one of the ethnic groups. I think differently, that's a different story. But the ethnic groups in this country, they live exactly the way when they left the country. Believe it or not, it's true.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I was just going to throw that out there because it occurred to me that, you know, sometimes with some things, when you put people together, they just sort of balance into a similar lot. But
I think the younger generation is different. Okay, let me put it this way. The people who have our first generation immigrants from wherever they've come from, whichever part of the world, are going to stay true to their roots, from where they've come from, right? They are going to, when they come into this country, yes, they are coming for a better life. But in my research, from what I've seen, is they remain very true to their culture, from where they've come from all the practices where they've come from, and all those things, all of the above that exist. Now, when you're talking about second generation, meaning, you know, kids who have been born here, irrespective of whether they're Muslim or whichever culture, they are Americans. They do not see themselves as Muslims. You know, I don't know about so much about Muslims, but they, from what I've seen from other cultures, they are all the same, to your point, because they have grown up in an environment which is, you know, America and the same culture. So they see themselves as Americans. But the first generation immigrants, they hold on to the cultures. That is a fact.
I guess my question too was, as you were talking again, I was thinking, like, the person, the children, might consider themselves Americans or Canadians, but do their bodies know that? You know, so I guess that's a whole nother, we could go down a rabbit hole.
And they have to deal with their cultural identity as well. I'll tell you why. Because let's say any different culture, if they're born in America or Canada or wherever, but they look from a certain culture, the features and the color of the skin and all that stuff. So sooner or later, someone will say, hey, are you from XYZ? So they need to understand that cultural identity they're coming from and deal with it, whatever way they have to deal with it, right? Because that is a fact too, right?
That might be a good segue now. As I was going through your website, I was taken with the international representation of your advisors. Mm-hmm. How did you do that?
I went around the world when we decided we are going to go deeper into the topic. I tried to look for in US, and US is still coming up with this topic, with the research and all that. There is so much more research that has been done in UK, as an example, that I found. Even in Australia, some of the other topics are more like Ayurveda, yoga, you know, it comes from India. So I had to go around the world and interview and talk to all these experts about whichever topic. And that's kind of how we did it. Because if we brought in all US and Canada, some of the times, the depth of this research has not been done in these countries, and they're not aware of what is happening and why it is happening, more so in countries like UK as an example, even in Australia. So I had to go and knock on doors, and some of the experts over there in UK, Australia, India, mainly these three countries, and Canada and US, five countries I went over and talked to them. That's all I had to do. But it took a lot of time and effort, but that's what we did.
Right. Now, still talking about your website, we're going to go there in a minute. You have a lot of programs with a lot of different modalities. I saw Reiki, tapping, reflexology. I mean, there's so many possibilities. Yeah. Does that mean that some approaches work better for a certain woman than another woman might need or want?
Absolutely. Yes, we have yoga, breathing, so stuff like that. Some women might find it difficult to do yoga, asanas, or postures, as an example. Then Qigong, although we don't have Qigong that much, but I'm just making an example. Tai Chi or Qigong might be easier. It's easier to do. So it's not what we are presenting is, the way we are presenting is when you come into our website, and we haven't rolled it out yet. We're changing a lot of things. Is either you're perimenopausal or you're postmenopausal, right? So depending on where you are, this or that way, your needs are different. You know, you have irregular periods, you have no periods. Now, depending on that, once you understand where we are taking you, then after that, depending on the kind of symptoms you have or concerns you have, we start giving you, feeding you all the natural way that you can fix it yourself, self-care. Right? That's really the intention. So now everyone is going to be different. So the programs, to your point, we actually have about 21 programs on the website. We barely have written 6 or 7 or something like that. In reality, the way we do is everyone starts with either peri or post so that they understand the basics, you know, where they are. Then after that, for post, for example, you want to make sure you don't get diabetes, you don't get osteoporosis, as an example. You don't get dementia, memory health becomes important. You don't get heart disease. Weight is, of course, an issue. And we were talking about the emotional part or some other things, right? Yeah. So then based on the concerns the person has, we start feeding them that. So there are about 21 programs that we have created based on the concerns that each woman could have.
Yeah. When I was reading like all the different possibilities, what came to mind for me was I used to be super active. And if anything happened to my body, I would have people say, oh, you've got to go to a chiropractor. And I went to a chiropractor and personally, I got worse. Go to my physiotherapist and it's everything works and I'm back in shape in no time at all. So obviously physio works for me, chiro doesn't. And that's where that question came from, thinking that,
yes,
you know, maybe.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, like me, you know, I get Ayurvedic massages done. I get acupuncture done. If some, you know, so that works for me. As an example, if someone tells me something else, that might not work for me. Yes. So everyone's different. So it's just that learning all these tools are there for you to pick and choose. That's really the key. And then, of course, every woman is going to be different. We talk about the cultural differences because of based on the lifestyle and based on whatever life they have had in the past. And then they have to choose whatever works for them.
Yeah. And do they then possibly choose something and go with that for 6 months or a year and then move into something else?
So the basic thing what we have is a basic app that we're coming out. You know, what you see on our website, we're changing it. So app would be either on iOS or through the web as well. And they can learn, and that's going to be priced like $5-6 a month, very, very affordable. Okay. So everybody can learn what they want to. And then after that, if someone wants to upgrade, right, that they said, okay, I need my one-on-one. I need someone to help me craft a holistic wellness plan. And what that means is it could be a naturopathic doctor who looks at your results, like blood results or whatever. Then there could be a dietitian along with that. And there could be a yoga therapist or some kind of an exercise movement specialist. Let's put it this way, who will help you. And then there could be a mental health counselor. So that could be, okay, now I have my personalized holistic plan that I can take and start following along. So the first step is just a basic intro to wherever you are. And then the second step is, okay, now I can do the more detailed, personalized, right? And then in between, the way what we are structuring is depending on what people want, we will get experts. For example, 1 week could be a urinary tract infection expert, as an example. A lot of postmenopausal women have that issue. If we are doing the postmenopause track, then could be a sexologist, then could be a gynecologist, that could be a mental health counselor or psychologist, you know, what the mental thing is going on. So the whole, and then could be a financial planner, because a lot of women are now not working and they feel like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Could be a career counselor as well. So the whole idea is to present this entire perspective of a woman's journey, right? In a way that women can start now taking decisions what is best for them. So we are just a vehicle. We're not saying do this, don't do this, right? We're not doing that. We are just presenting all the solutions that we have found via research, this whole vast area which is underrepresented nowadays. And then, you know, they take to whatever they think is the best for them. And in fact, we are also thinking of bringing the HRT at a later point. You know, after a few months, I want to bring the HRT as well. If they need to talk to someone who understands the HRT, why not?
I'm going to put this term out there, and I mean it in the very best way possible, is it becomes almost like one-stop shopping, where you don't have to go from, you know, this website to this website and look into background and look into this. And it's all there on the one website, or it will be. And it just makes it so much easier to browse and choose. So that's
yes,
amazing. Yeah. What haven't we talked about that you would like mid-age women to think about especially post-menopause, because most of us, our listeners, are boomers.
Yeah, so I think believe in yourself, invest in yourself, you are worth it, you know, you are special. I want to tell all the women, every post, it doesn't matter which stage you are, you know, you are beautiful. So you know, you just have to seize the moment. This could be a reinvention of your second career, right? Don't think that you're done. I really want to say that, because You know, I myself have changed careers like 4 or 5 times out of necessity, out of whatever. But I think each one of us, something in us, which we want to do for ourselves, so do it. Don't stop, let anything stop you, and use the holistic, embrace the holistic lifestyle to take care of yourself. That then only you can give back to something else or do something else. That's the only thing I want to say to all the women out there.
Well, and I think I'm going to conclude the way I started. You have programs or whatever, you work with employers.
Yes, yes.
As well, I should add that.
Yes.
Tell us about
that. Brokers, insurance brokers, employers, the idea is to take this to as many women as possible, wherever the touch points are, whether they're working, because it's important, like you and I talked about, for younger women to understand what is coming. Now, when it comes to the post-menopause, it's hard for us to reach those women because most of them are out of workforce. Right, they're not working the 60 years and above, so that's why we have this app that we are hoping that, you know, women through podcasts or some other social, that they'll find us and they start using us. But yes, we do work with employers, nonprofits, all the organizations where women are kind of congregating.
That's amazing. That's great. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
Yeah, just go to our website. That's the best way, www.nourishtalk.com. And like I said, we will be releasing the web part of the app soon. It's already ready. And then the app will be coming on the iOS as well as Android. We will be putting the links on our website very, very soon. So stay tuned to that and let us know the feedback.
Okay. And I see lots of social icons here. You're on social media as well then.
Everywhere. People can find us on every single social media. We might not be as active on TikTok doing funny things right now. I did not know what to say initially, to be honest with you, but we have some things, but we will be coming out, you know, re-energizing our TikTok as well and all the social channels. So find us everywhere.
Okay, great. May I ask you a personal question before we conclude? You started out in architecture. That is such an interesting field. What took you there?
I always wanted to create something, you know, when I was very young. And I did not know at that time what I wanted to do, like a lot of people. And someone told me, hey, you're a creative person. I come from a family of all medical doctors, like usual, you know? And I said, no, I don't want to be a doctor. I want to do something creative. He said, what about architecture? So that's kind of how it happened.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Yeah. And I guess when you look at, you didn't really create a building or a monument, but you have created this amazing structure online. So mission accomplished, I guess.
You could be architect of anything. You don't have to create buildings only, right? Then I had to, when I left architecture, I said, you know what? I'm creating websites. I'm creating experiences for women. And that's when I was working for corporate, corporate tech world. I was creating all kind of different websites ranging from real estate, interior design, you name it. And I loved each and every moment of that. So that's what I said, okay, I'm architect of all these experiences that I'm creating, which are being used by millions and millions of people and, you know, these corporate companies that I was working for. So that's kind of, I feel like architect of this women wellness.
Okay, it's not often that I prove my ignorance twice in one podcast, but that's great. I always think about architecture and, you know, Sagrada Familia or something like that. But okay, so your website link is in the show notes. All the links will be on your page at our website. Listeners, if you have thoughts on today's show, talk to us. Most of us are post-menopause, and we have so many of our own stories. Tell us your stories. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Or there could well have been a question I did not ask Amita. Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Your stars and reviews help us grow. Be generous and share this episode. We are mostly postmenopause, so some of this info will be pertinent. I can get that word out. But if you have a daughter, it's an addition to the info you can share with her. So important. Lastly, a reminder that you can help support this podcast by buying me a coffee. That link is in the show notes. Or sign up at Substack and get new conversations delivered to your inbox. Amita Sharma, thank you for being my guest today. We really do need to change the response of too much of the world to women's hormonal changes. And you're obviously just going to knock the socks off of that. That's so important. And thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
Have a great rest of the week.